Welcome to Babe, also known as the Badass Babes of Entertainment. We'll be talking about everything industry related. If there is a topic you would like us to cover, just message us on Insta at Babes of Entertainment, also on Facebook, Babes of Entertainment, and on Twitter, BABE_podcast. Welcome to the Badass Babes of Entertainment, Anna Hager. Woo! Hi, oh. Anna. Hi. You're so cute. Anna Hager is 7 years old, and she is a badass babe in the making because she has been working in the entertainment industry as an actress since she was 3 years old as a series regular. Isn't that right?
Yep. That's right.
What TV show were you on? Can you tell us?
Yes, I was on this TV show called Life in Pieces.
And who did you play on the show?
I played Lark.
You played Lark. And who were your parents?
My parents were, I forgot what their name was, their fake names, but their real names was Colin and Zoe.
Colin and Zoe, and she's talking about Colin Hanks and Zoe Lister-Jones. Awesome, yeah. Awesome, awesome. So, Miss Anna, you also speak German, is that correct?
Yeah.
Can you tell us some words in German or say something to us in German?
Yep. Hallo, ich bin Anna Sophia Hager.
Wow, look at that. Mm. That is so cool. I love that. She is multilingual. She's also learning Spanish in school, aren't you?
Yeah. How do you know all these things?
I know all these things because I'm your manager and I'm supposed to know all these things, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why. So you have a big movie coming out and that's what we're so excited about now. Can you tell us about the movie?
What?
Can you tell us about your new movie coming out? What's the name of it?
It's called Things Heard and Seen.
Things Heard and Seen, and that's going to be on Netflix, right?
Yeah, I'm so excited for it.
Me too.
Me too.
Yeah, I've got Miss Megan is here with me today, and she has some questions for you too. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hi, Anna. So what can you tell us about working with Amanda? We know that she plays your mom in the movie, and I'm a huge fan of her, huge fan of yours, and just wanted to see what you can tell us, if you liked it and how much fun it was.
Yeah, it was so much fun, and she's a great actress, and she's so nice and so funny.
Is she funny? Aw, yeah. I love that.
I was so happy to act with her because she's really famous.
She is really famous, isn't she? You're going to be that famous one day, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yep. And I know you will because you are determined. You are a hard worker. I can't believe that we've had 2 7-year-olds on this show, 2 little badass babes of entertainment, you and Miss Journey. You guys will have to get together and be friends because I think you guys would really, really have a good time together because you're both work so hard and you're both so successful, and I'm so proud of you guys. So one day you'll have to meet and have a play date.
Yeah, I will once.
Yes, that would be so fun.
I'm curious, did Amanda give you any acting tips while you guys were on set together?
I forgot, actually.
That happens.
Yeah.
What did Amanda say to you that you remember that you thought was really cool?
She thinks I'm an awesome daughter.
Oh,
that's sweet.
That is sweet. That's really good. You always want people to think that you're a good kid, huh?
Yeah.
For sure. So you had to work some long days, and did anything really funny happen on set that made you giggle?
I don't think so.
No? It was pretty serious?
Oh, and for Halloween, James and Amanda dressed up.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
What did they dress up as?
So James was dressed up as a woman, and Amanda was dressed up as a man.
Oh, that's awesome. So they traded roles for the day?
Yeah.
That's funny. I like that. Did you dress up for Halloween?
No.
No, you didn't? You dressed up as Anna Sophia Hager that day?
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. So you have a little brother.
Yeah, I do.
Do you like being a big sister?
Uh-huh.
You do most days?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you play with him?
Yeah.
Yeah? Good. I'm glad you guys get along good. That's awesome. Really awesome.
So,
but sometimes we fight.
Sometimes you fight. Yeah, that happens with siblings too.
I think that happens. Yeah, with everyone.
With everybody. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So Miss Megan has another question.
Anna, what is your favorite part of being an actor?
Oh, my favorite part is intense stuff. And if I have a role, then I would love that it would have been intense and I would have had a part that I had to cry. I would love that.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Miss Anna is a very serious actress. And yes, she is. And she can play really intense drama roles and cries on cue.
That's pretty hard for people to do, even if you're not young.
Yeah, it really is. And she's mastered it since she was just little, and she's very, very good at it. So, I have a feeling she's going to end up in some really spooky roles. I've seen some of your auditions, and I'm like, yeah, she scares me a little bit. Do you like to be scary?
Yeah.
Yeah? Do you creep your mom and dad out sometimes? Yeah.
Yes. Sometimes I really scare my mommy.
Yeah? She's like, good. This is great.
That's so funny. Oh,
I love it. That's so funny.
Anna, have you ever thought about if you weren't an actor, what you would want to do when you grew up?
Yeah, I would be a doctor.
Oh, wow. Do you know what kind of doctor? Would you want to take care of animals or kids or babies or do surgery?
I say surgery. I do surgery.
You do surgery and save people's lives?
Isn't that always the way? You're really talented with one thing and then you're really smart?
Yes. Yeah. But she's going to be one of those, I think.
Yeah.
For sure.
I think it sounds like you could do anything, Anna.
Yes. I agree. So now you're going to have a lot to do. You're going to have all that schooling to do for surgery, and then you're going to do all your acting stuff and have to memorize lines and do scary roles that creep mom and dad out, right?
Yeah, I will.
I love it.
Certain scene is creepy, actually.
Is it really creepy?
Yeah.
Awesome.
I'm excited to watch it.
Did it make you scared?
No.
Never scared you at all?
No. And there's supposed to be a ghost in our house.
Really?
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh,
no. I like ghosts. That's
I might have to watch it with Brenda so she can hold my hand.
I know, right? Megan gets scared.
I do. I get scared really easily. I'm like,
Yeah.
So Things Heard and Seen's coming out April 29th. Is that what I understand?
Yes.
On Netflix. So
soon.
I can't wait. I'm excited. Are you going to watch it?
No.
You're not too scary?
No. It's not for kids.
It's not for kids.
Not for kids.
Do you like watching yourself? Did you watch yourself on Life in Pieces?
Yeah, I have. I've watched all of the episodes.
That's pretty cool.
What was your favorite episode on Life in Pieces?
I think the first episode that I've been on, it was the pacifier one.
Oh, the pacifier one. That was a good one. Do you know which one's my favorite?
No.
You don't? I know your mom knows. I love the pageant episode. When you were dancing and doing your routine, I was laughing so hard that I was about to cry. I was laughing so hard. You were hilarious.
Thank you.
I loved it so much. So what are you going to do the rest of today?
I don't know yet. We haven't planned things yet, but I'm really hungry. I'm going to eat after this.
You're going to eat after this?
I totally understand that.
I'm with you, girl. That sounds good to me. So what do you want to tell all of your fans out there in La La Land? about things heard and seen and anything else you want to tell us, or just let us know anything about that film that you can share with us.
I think that's it, actually.
You think that's it? Okay, because I know you can't say too much. You don't want to spoil it for us, right?
Yeah, I don't want to say too much, so I know part of the movie, but I'm not going to tell you.
Okay, we'll talk about it after I watch it and after I'm scared, and then I'll say, Anna, you didn't tell me it was so scary, right? So, Things Heard and Seen on Netflix, April 29th, and I will make sure that this episode comes out in time to promote it so that everybody knows to tune in to Things Heard and Seen with Amanda Seyfried and Miss Anna Sophia Hager, and that will be on Netflix on April 29th. Make sure you guys watch!
Can't wait.
Woohoo!
Okay.
Thanks, Anna.
Thank you. So nice to meet
you. You're welcome.
You can go eat your lunch. Bye, sweetie.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, guys. We want to invite you to follow Babe. You can like and subscribe, as well as giving us 5 stars if you love us, which we hope you do. Thank you so much for being part of Babe. You can follow us on all things social media. Insta at Babes of Entertainment, Twitter, Babe_podcast, and Facebook at Babes of Entertainment. You got it? Now come on.
Well, welcome to the Badass Babes of Entertainment, Mr. G. Charles Wright, casting director extraordinaire. G. Charles Wright is a native of Los Angeles and started his career by interning for Cecily Adams on Third Rock from the Sun. Afterwards, G. and Cecily took over casting duties on That 70s Show. He was also the casting director on The Middle for 9 seasons, 100 episodes of Anger Management, and many other notable shows. He's one of the funniest people we know, and lover of dogs and advocate for women. He is also an audition coach, which is how Megan met him, and I met him on a little bit different area. And oh my goodness gracious, and there is a doggy. Hello, what is your doggy's name?
This is Miko. I renamed both of my dogs over the pandemic because we were spending so much time together, and I just renamed them. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, is that hilarious?
Like that is funny.
That's funny life. This is Miko, and then I also have he is an old dog. He is 12 years old.
Baby.
And I have a 6-year-old dog, almost 6, 5 and a half, named Rasmus. And Rasmus does not like to be picked up.
Oh, well.
He just has too much energy for it. So, but he's over here as well.
He's like, I got things to do.
Yep.
That is awesome. We love dogs. We're huge dog people here. I have 3 myself, so totally understand. They are our babies for sure.
Yeah.
So, and it's so funny, G, you actually cast my son Bryce on The Middle.
Yes, I remember Bryce played 2 different roles on The Middle, if I recall correctly.
Well, he was on 2 different episodes. I think he was playing the same character. He was the bully. He was a bully. And
Right.
So he got to come back for a 2nd episode. That was a lot of fun. So thank you for that, because he really enjoyed that. And he took a break from acting for a little bit, but he's back at it again. And he's an adult, which is freaking me out. He's 19.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
It is. They keep aging. They need to stop.
Yeah, yeah. I've been at this long enough now that people that I cast as little, 6-year-old kids are now, could have 6-year-old kids of their own.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Isn't that wild? That is so wild.
So I am curious, G, what entices you about casting? How did you get into it? What's kind of your journey? What's your draw to casting?
You know, I came to casting a lot like I think most people came to casting, at least in the old days, and that's by accident.
Okay.
So it tends to, I think it's changing now as there is more awareness of casting, But I do think that for a long time, it was sort of an accidental profession because, you know, casting has changed a lot over the course of the history of film and television. It used to be a studio position. So every studio had its own casting department and they would cast the roles for that studio. And then that all changes over time and then become independent casting directors and all that stuff. So people did, I think, kind of fall into it a little bit by accident. And I did that. I started out as an actor, which is how I knew Cecily Adams, who became my casting director mentor. Cecily and I were actors together in an improv class. We were at a, I think when she and I met, we were in a sketch writing class. One of our classmates was Will Forte.
Oh, wow.
Now a big star. And so I got to know Cecily at that time and discovered through the class, she was so funny. And Cecily has passed away. So I will be speaking of her in the past tense. She did die from cancer in 2004. So Cecily was a really funny woman. And then I discovered that not only was she a brilliant comedic actress, she was also a casting director while we were acting students. She was a casting director and she taught an audition technique class. So I started taking her audition technique class, and through the 3 years or so that I took that class with her, we became real close, and I started facilitating the class for her, which means basically signing people up month to month, making sure they paid and all that jazz. So during that time, I'm also, you know, I'm an actor, and like most aspiring actors, I have a day job, and it was in the tech field. I worked in the tech industry for 8 years, and I had a chance to get out. So I was working for a company in 1999 that got bought by another company and it triggered a stock plan that I was in as an employee. I hadn't been at this company very long, so it wasn't a whole lot of money, but it was enough money for me at the ripe old age of 33, I had just turned 33, to quit my job and kind of hit the reset button on my life. And I thought about, you know, what would I like to really pursue that I hadn't yet. And I thought that I'd like to be a writer. I have always written stuff. I was always a writer. I had gotten many jobs over the course of my life because of my writing and people enjoying my writing, short stories and stuff like that. So I went to Cecily and I said, can I intern in your casting office? I know that a lot of actors in our class intern. And now that I'm free during the day, maybe I could come and intern in the casting office and use that as an opportunity to maybe become a writer's assistant on a show. I didn't really know. I didn't know how any of it worked. So I went and started interning and discovered that most of the actor interns that we had in a casting office or that she had in her casting office would show up for, you know, 2 or 3 hours, maybe, you know, twice a week, mostly there to help wrangle actors and stuff when you're having big audition sessions. Nothing too time consuming. You're working for free. Well, I didn't have a job. And so I really liked showing up. And I also had all this experience working, you know, having had real jobs working in offices. So I knew how to do things in an office that some of our actor interns did not know how to do. Simple things like how to answer the phone and run a fax machine. Both of these are things that no one uses in an office anymore. But anyway, what I discovered though pretty quick was that the casting office felt like the job that I had been preparing for my entire life and didn't know it. It pulled on all of my strengths and all the things that I love. So I stayed with it. As you mentioned in my bio, Cecily was working for a casting company at the time. And after about 6 months of me interning there, she decided to quit that company and go out on her own. And she asked me to go with her. And that was kind of how it all started. Now, I will tell you that at the time, I did not realize that TV writers make about 100 times more money than casting directors do. So I think that had I known that at the time, I probably would have stayed on the path of trying to get a job as a writer's assistant. But I'm really happy in casting. I really like it. Like I say, it pulls on everything I love. So that's how I got into it, sort of by accident, and really loved it.
You don't want to switch now to being a writer?
Well, what am I, 54 years old? I mean, what's the, I mean.
Start making that money.
No, what I honestly now, well, so now when I started in casting, we were not part of a union. We're really the only crew job on a show that was not unionized, largely because it's an accidental profession and people just fell into it accidentally. And it had changed so much over the course of 100 years of show business. So it never really had the chance to properly unionize. Anyway, we did finally in 2006. And so honestly, now that I'm 54, the way I look at my life is I'm kind of working for retirement at this point. And so quite honestly, I would love to just keep working in casting and try to build up my pension so that I can retire. I do love writing, and maybe someday I'll write something. Sure. But
Still look great. That's what's important.
Thank you. I must have the beauty filter on.
You know, I have to say this, like the smallest I think I've ever seen your beard. Usually when I've seen your beard has been much longer.
Yeah, that's true. It is. Well, you know, I'm at home now all the time. So I have ample opportunity to just trim it. Whereas I think when we were doing the middle, I was pretty busy for a while, especially those years when I was doing the middle and anger management. And so, yeah, I tended to just, it does grow pretty quick. So it gets pretty out of hand.
So, gee, we are wondering, when you are in the casting room, what is it that you say, this is the one, this is the actor?
It's the person that, now keep in mind that I'm not the one at the end of the day who makes the decision on who gets a role.
Right.
But
I'm sure you have an idea who do you want to move on the next process?
Yeah. So it basically always comes down to the actors that feel the most specific for the role that I'm casting, that really seem to embody the character that I'm looking to cast. Sometimes those people also fit a certain physical type. But not necessarily. And one of the things on the middle was they always like to see a lot of different shapes and sizes for people. Occasionally, they had real specific physical types of people they wanted. But for the most part, they like to see a lot of different character types. And then what they were looking to find was someone that intrinsically had the attitude that they wanted for the role. So I always fall in love with the actors who come in and really just feel like they bring the scene to life. I equate acting, certainly auditioning, sort of to be like being a magician. If you've ever been like to the Magic Castle or any place where you've seen magicians perform, you know that when you're watching the magician perform, you know it's not real magic. This is not sorcery.
It's not.
Oh, I was afraid that I was going to dispel this for you, Megan, but it's true.
Yeah.
So it's what they're doing is creating an illusion. And if they do it well, they make you believe it. You suspend your disbelief. And it's the same thing with acting. If I know when you come in that you're not this character in real life. I know that we're not really in this scenario. I've read the sides many times. But if you can come in and give a performance that makes me really believe it and see it, that's exciting to me. And that's what I try to teach in my classes too.
I think that's great. I think that's a great reminder for actors to hear, because it's just sometimes we can get in our head of like, I'm perfect, you don't understand. And it's like, you might just be looking for that X factor, that very specific, but it's not something that you can train for. It might be a specific thing that you can't train for. That's always pretty hard for us.
Yeah. And it's always hard to tell people too, like, hey, you know, you might have had the best, you know, performance, but you just weren't what they were looking for, you know, maybe physically. There could be a million things, you know, especially when we, you know, see the tapes and they've done such a great job. It's like, you know, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. You know, I always tell actors, I tell my students this all the time. The goal of your audition is not to book the job. The goal of your audition is to do the job at the audition, because like you said, there's a million reasons why they may not book the job that are completely out of their control. They do not control any of that. I do think that you can learn how to be better at auditioning. And I do think it does require a certain skill set, but that doesn't always mean you're going to book every role that you're not going to book every role that you go out on. You will, in fact, book fewer roles than you go out on. You will never book more of them than you don't. And it just does come down to what you really want to show in a casting office is that you're a good auditioner and that you can make a role come to life. There are plenty of good actors who are really lousy at auditioning. So they may be thinking, oh, I'm so great, I'm so right for this part, but they do not have the ability through their training to make that come alive in an audition. And so I hear this from actors a lot. They say, if they could just hire me, I would be great for this role. It's the auditioning part I have a hard time with. And I don't always agree with that. Although auditioning is very different than acting on the set. And sometimes the way you perform in an audition that gets you the role may not even be the same way that you perform on set. The director may completely change it. But you have to show the casting office that you're a good auditioner. Because that is effectively how you get more work eventually, because you get known as a good auditioner and they can bring you back for more and more stuff. So I do get real excited when I meet people that are great in the room, because even if they don't book the job, I know I can bring them back for other stuff.
I do remember you saying that a lot in class, and that really stuck with me. And so it's hard when I'm kind of that way now, that I'm like, oh, it's okay, I didn't book it. And then my friends, family, actors are like, oh, that sucks. And I'm like, no, that's okay. Like, you know, I'm sure they liked my tape. They'll bring me back for something else. And they don't really understand that because they don't have that mentality.
Yeah, so. It's really tough. It's really tough as an actor because so many of our small victories are victories that lay people do not understand at all.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, yep. Yeah, what is absolutely. One thing that you wish actors knew that you wish you could just shake them and tell them?
All the stuff that we just talked about.
Listen up, actors. He gave it to you straight.
That's right.
Yeah. That really is it.
Stop your whining and just keep going. That's all you can do.
It's tough, you know, because this is it's a career of so much rejection. So the thing that you have to do is stop rejecting yourself. Mm. And when you and if you, like I said, so if you make the goal of every, if you make the goal of your auditions to book the job, you are going to create a great deal of rejection for yourself where you shouldn't, because those getting an opportunity to audition is already a huge victory.
That's
getting
true.
A callback is a huge victory.
Mm-hmm.
Getting pinned for a role is a huge victory.
Yep.
And all of those things tell you that you are on the right track.
Definitely.
There was an actress when I was casting That 70s Show. Now, I started on that show in season two, and I was working with Cecily. And then while Cecily was sick with cancer, I secretly took over as the casting director of the show because she was too ill to work. But we didn't want anybody to know. So I started really casting that show on my own by season five. I had only started in season two. And by season, I think maybe season seven or eight, which was the last season of the show, I remember an actress coming in that I had seen over the years. It was always very good. And so we kept bringing her back. She didn't book. And so we kept bringing her back for stuff. And she came in one time and she said, I just want to thank you. You're so kind to keep bringing me in when I don't book for you. I think it's so sweet that you still aww. At least give me chances. And I said, listen, this isn't a charity event. No need to thank me for that. I bring you in because you're good. And we'll find the right fit for you. And eventually we did. She did end up booking something, but on the show. But yeah, I thought it was I thought it was, I felt so bad that she felt bad about herself. When she should have been feeling great about herself because she kept getting called back in. I think it comes down to the fact that, you know, on That 70s Show, if you're familiar with the show,
yes,
we were casting the sort of the same guest star role in and out almost week after week, which was sexy, almost aggressively sexy blonde women over 21 to play high school. Mm-hmm. That was the role. We cast that character type more than we cast anything else on the show. And this actress who came in is not that role. She was more, I would say, more girl next door. Mm-hmm. More, she'd be even funnier playing anxious and sweet characters. And what we had to fill was not that niche most weeks. So it took a while for them to write one of those and for that to really kind of land for her. But I think that speaks to her inability to see who she is as a performer and to understand, oh yeah, yeah, that's so great that they bring me in for this. This is, I can see why I didn't get this part. I'm more of a this. And that's a tough thing for most actors. I think for most of us just as human beings to really be comfortable in a sense of who we are as people, that's very difficult. For a lot mm-hmm. of us, it doesn't happen until later in life, if it happens at all. And as an actor, it's twice as difficult because not only do you have to have a sense of who you are as a human being, but you also have to have an understanding of, in addition to that, what type of character types do I intrinsically play? And these are not always the same types of human that you are yourself. Right. Some of the best villains that I know are in reality the sweetest and nicest human beings I know. So, yes. You know, but it can, I had a friend when I was a kid, I met him at summer camp. We were at a performance art summer camp in 1983. We were both in high school and his name is Andrew Koenig. A lot of my friends are dead. So I will be talking, I'm also talking about Andrew in the past tense. But when we were in high school and we met at the summer camp and we became best friends. And shortly after that, he landed on a TV series called Growing Pains, where he played Kirk Cameron's best friend, Boner.
Yes.
So, and now this is in the days, of course, this is in the 1980s when there were only three networks. When he landed that show, there wasn't even a Fox network yet. You know, there was just ABC, CBS, and NBC. Fox eventually came along during that run. And even when Fox started as a network, they only had original TV programming one night a week on Sundays. Wow. So, I mean, there was only three networks. So if you were on a TV show on one of those networks, everybody knew who you were. You couldn't go anywhere without people knowing who you were and being stopped or asked for an autograph or something like that. You didn't even have to watch the show to know if they were a TV star. There's only three networks. And he played this complete idiot character on that show. And he hated it because he felt that people thought he was that guy in real life. In real life, he's not that guy at all. Very, right. Very cerebral, very determined. He was, and he had we were young. We were kids ourselves. And it was really debilitating for him because he just couldn't separate it. I was always looking at it from the outside, you know, going, dude, you're crazy. How do you not, what doesn't even matter what if people are just excited. It never seemed to me like anyone thought he was really that character. People were just excited to meet him when they would see us on the streets and they would see him. But for him, he really hated that character. And it was detrimental to his acting career because he fought against it so hard instead of embracing that character type that I thought he played really, really well, and just chalking it up to being one of the character types he played. He ended up forcing them to let him out of his contract on the show.
Oh my God.
And it and his career never recovered after that, which was then even more upsetting and debilitating for him as a human being. Aww. And it really stuck with me because I too at the time had no real sense. I had no real sense of I feel like he had a sense of who he was, but he was really at odds with how he felt people were perceiving him. I didn't even have a sense of who I was. So I think I was really excited about people perceiving me in any way. So I think to be a really successful actor and a human being, you have to know who you are and you have to be comfortable with it. And then as an actor, you have to also be comfortable with knowing the types of roles you play intrinsically.
Definitely. That is great advice.
Yeah, and so interesting to hear you can, quote unquote, make it and still be really depressed.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Which it's not
sad.
Booking, you know, they sometimes, what is it they say, be careful what you wish for. There's being unhappy is a state of mind that does not change when you add things to your life.
Right.
So you have to have that in yourself. Yeah, and it's tough. This is a tough, tough industry to be in. And it requires a tremendous amount of a thick skin. And I really feel that the best thing you can do as an actor is to really understand and be at peace with who you are. And then to understand beyond that, what types of roles you play intrinsically. Because as actors, we want to play every role under the sun. And there can be a venue for that. In small theater or local theater, you can play roles that you might not get cast in on TV or film. Plenty of big TV and film actors will do small theater because they can play those roles that they would not normally get cast in, get typecast. So it's important to understand, okay, well, these are the types of roles that I play intrinsically, which is why I book them so often.
Right.
Because I play these characters so instinctually, without even knowing I play these characters well. So these are the roles I book, because your competition for those roles are going to be other people that play those roles intrinsically. Because the camera really captures that. And so understanding that this is what I play, or these are the types of characters I play. Some people play like one type of character, like that's their bag. And others have a range that they play. But, Meryl Streep, who everyone, you know, always thinks of as, you know, having a limitless range, does not. I don't know about you, but I've seen Meryl Streep in a lot of roles where she got those, where I just shake my head and I think, what the fuck were they thinking casting Meryl Streep as, in Angels in America? Why cast Meryl Streep as a small, elderly Jewish male rabbi? Why is that happening? So, stuff like that.
Kind of like when I saw Jennifer Aniston and We're the Millers, I was like, I'm sorry, yes, she's hot, but I don't see her as a stripper.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Like, she's good. She's a great actress, but the casting,
Right. So now people like Meryl Streep or Jennifer Aniston in that case too, they are getting those roles really because they are such huge stars that they will put butts in seats. So they know that people will come out to see them. But you're right. And for the rest of us who are not putting butts in seats because of our marquee value, we have to understand what we play, because we're not going to be given those opportunities to play outside of our intrinsic character types.
Yep.
Definitely. So what is the craziest thing an actor has done in the room that you were just like, WTF, did that just happen?
There are three
Oh, this is going to be good.
There are stories that all come from around the same era. And that's when I was doing that 70s show and that 80s show. So the first story was when I was still an intern. And I was there to help. They were having a session for something, and I was out in the lobby. So I wasn't even in the room for the auditions, but I was out in the casting office making sure that the actors who came in have signed in. And my job was to call an actor, was to call each actor in and walk them back through the office to where the casting office was, and then introduce them when they walked in, and then close the door behind, and then close the door. So this was, I don't remember what the role was, but it was a it was female role in her 20s. And I would go over to the table in the little waiting area where the actors were, and I'd have to kind of bend down over the table to cross people off of it and to call out the next name. And some actress that was there said that when I bent down over the table, she could see my boxer shorts coming up out of the back of my pants. I could see her underwear. And then all the other girls laugh. And so then I, of course, turn around because I am G. Charles Wright. And I said, well, at least we all know I'm wearing underwear and we should be thankful for that. And then I called her. It was the same woman who said that. And I call her name, and I'm walking her down this long hallway to take her back to the office. And I'm ahead of her, and I hear her say, hey. I turn around, and she has lifted up her top and with one hand and pulling her pants sort of slightly down with her other hand, she exposes that she too is also wearing underwear.
Wow.
And oh, thank God. She says, I just thought you'd like to know that I'm also wearing underwear.
Wow. And you're like, okay.
Now, I've been in this game, you know, for maybe a solid 2 months.
And you thought, woohoo.
2 or 3 months at this point. I thought, is this what it's going to be like? Because this is the stuff you hear about. This is the stuff you hear about in stories. I thought, this is crazy. This is really, really strange and unusual. And this is going to really screw with my head. And, which is the way I think about stuff like that. I don't go, oh yeah, this is how it's going to be. I'm like, oh no, this is dangerous. And I have to figure out like, who are these people? But anyway, it never happened again. Not even anything close. But it did happen that day. So now the other story is also female, and I have one male story to end this with. But the other story is a female casting that 70s show. I think around season 5 or 6. The storyline was, this is when Ashton Kutcher's character Kelso has, in this episode, he has this dream. And in the dream, he's a cop. And it is this dream. I don't know if you remember on the show, every episode, they would always have some sort of dream or fantasy sequence. So that was this thing. Anyway, he wakes up from this dream and says, I got to become a cop. The dream sequence that I'm casting is Kelso is a cop, like old-timey cop with the baton and the big mustache. And this dream sequence takes place in a bikini store, a store that sells bikinis. And of course, the saleswoman is in a bikini. Her character's name is Bikini Clad Girl. And she is being held up by an old-timey bank robber, dressed in the black with the Hamburglar mask on, right? And, you know, he says, you know, give me all your money. And she's, oh, I don't have any money. I just have bikinis or whatever the thing was. And then Kelso comes in and knocks the guy over with his billy club and carries him out. And then the bikini clad girl hugs him and kisses him. So that's the scene, bikini clad girl. And so one actress comes into the room. I had an actor friend of mine with me as the reader in this session. And he would often be a reader for me. This woman comes in and she's all done up. She looks very, very pretty, very put together. She's wearing a trench coat. So you already can see, so I can tell from your reaction, you already know where this is going. She's wearing a trench coat and she asks if she can take it off when she comes into the room because the room is very warm, she says.
she says.
It's very warm outside, too. This is not trench coat weather.
It's very warm, she says.
Yeah. So I say, also knowing exactly what you know, I'm all, yeah, sure, take your trench coat off. And she is wearing, of course, just a very small bikini. And some of those, you know, those Lucite pumps with a little plastic daisy on them. We call them like stripper heels, I guess.
Uh-huh.
So she had on a pair of those. And I said, yes, of course. As I had anticipated from your trench coat. And she says, well, I'm a method actress. And okay. So it's time to do the scene. Now it's a very short scene. It's not very long at all. And she says to me, would you mind if I got closer to the reader? And I looked at because you know, when you're on an audition, there's a social distance between you performing and where the reader is. And typically we'll have like an X on the floor where you would stand, which would be your mark. So I looked at him and he just kind of shrugged and looked at me. And I said, yeah, sure, okay. So she does her scene, but literally lap danced my reader in her bikini, which also, by the way, slowed the scene way down.
No, so I'm sure.
She manages in doing this lap dance to really kill all of the comedy in this very short scene. Anyway, so she does it, and it's hilarious for all the wrong reasons. And she's not good. She's not good at all. She looks great. I should tell you, she looks great in this bikini. She looks terrific. She's great body, great figure. She looks like a stripper that makes a lot of money. That's what she looked like.
Nice.
And I said to her, so when she finishes, she does it. And I just stopped. I just looked at him. I looked at her and I said, okay, let me see you do it again. And then she did it again. Exactly the same way, because I just wanted to see if she would lap dance him one more time.
Oh, Lord.
He probably loved you. He said, best boss ever.
Yeah.
This is why I did that. I knew with the first take of her audition that I would be telling this story for the rest of my life as worst audition story that had happened. And, you know, actors always wonder if they should get a redirect in a room or not. Well, if somebody comes in and they're so off base with their performance like this, how do you redirect that? What kind of note could I legitimately give her as an actor?
You say no lap dance. No lap dance next time.
You can't. No. That's not a legitimate note, Megan, because because doing the lap, no one should have come in preparing lap dance.
Oh,
if
okay.
anyone does that, you already know they're so off base, there's no really helping them. So I had to do it one more time just for the hell of it. And then she left. But and the third story is this was for that 80s show. It was for a punk rock nightclub doorman. He had one line, which was $5. He had to say the line twice. The lead character on 80s show is trying to get into the nightclub without paying just so that he can see if his girlfriend is inside. And he is stopped by this doorman who says twice, $5. So I had this guy come in, and I brought him in based on a postcard submission, and he looked perfect to play a doorman at a punk rock nightclub in the 1980s. He had a mohawk, a lot of tattoos, leather jacket, all this stuff. His resume had a lot of, didn't have any TV, but he had a great deal of theater experience from New York. So I thought, let's see him. This guy came in and barked and growled like a dog for 30 seconds and just growl like a dog. I can't even do it anymore. I used to try to imitate it, but sticking his tongue out and doing it's literally all he has to say is $5. And then I say a line and then he goes, $5. And that's it. That's the scene. This guy just literally, arr, 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 stuff like that. And then would yell, $5, arr, 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 like a rabid dog.
Wow.
And I did the same thing with him that I did with the Bikini Clad Girl when we were finished, because I was laughing hysterically at everything. I just asked him to do it again, and he did it exactly the same way again, because I knew I'd be telling this story forever. So, so these are the worst stories that ever happened to me, and I assure you that none of those three people came in thinking that day, how do I sabotage my audition? I know. I'm going to flash my underwear to the casting assistant, or I'm going to come in a bikini and lap dance the reader, or I'm going to bark and growl and spit all over the casting director. Nobody thought any of those things. What they thought they were doing was standing out and taking a risk that other people would be afraid to take.
They got that right.
Yeah.
That's what they I think he looked at those sides and thought, $5, $5, everybody will do that the same way. I'm going to do it different. And I think she looked at Bikini Clad Girl and said, nobody else is going to have the guts to come in their bathing suit. And I want to show that I'm confident enough that I can do that. And she did it. And then the other girl with the, I think was whatever her issue was. So, I've never seen any of those three people again, ever. But anyway, wow. Those are the three strangest audition stories I have. And they all come from that same time period. You know, when I was casting Anger Management in the Middle, you know, it was such a different type of show that I never had an opportunity for people to really come in and be grossly inappropriate because of the nature of the show and the types of characters that we were casting. So, I mean, there were a lot of real train wrecks that I saw, but nothing that really stands out. And then for Anger Management, where I was oftentimes casting love interest characters for Charlie Sheen, I was seeing a lot of the same actresses I had seen back on that 70s show, but now I was seeing them 10 years later, and these women are in their mid 30s to 40. And if I'm calling them back, these are professional actresses that I had seen, and these aren't the kind of people who are doing that kind of stuff. And even if you were to I wouldn't run across a new actress in her that's, you know, about 35 or 40 playing these kinds of roles that would feel the need to go over the top like that. You wouldn't feel that way at that age.
Right.
Even if you were new to the business. And even though Charlie Sheen was the star of the show. So I didn't really run into those same issues. And now I cast a show on Disney Plus that almost everything takes place at a middle school and a high school. So I assure you, nothing happens there.
Right. Well, I know that you had a lot of parents coming in with their kids. Were any of the parents like completely off the rails?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, you must have seen this when you were taking Bryce to auditions, right?
Yes, I saw some really interesting things, and I thought, oh, dear God, I hope they're not doing anything weird in front of casting. That would be so embarrassing.
So the truth is, most of those stories of bad parent behavior at auditions are stories that were typically told to me secondhand by my assistants who would be sitting out in the lobby or the casting office. Because when I'm auditioning the kid, I'm only seeing the kid. Like I'll walk out into the lobby and call a kid and then bring them into the office, and then they do the audition and then I have them go back out. So my interaction time isn't as much. And usually when I walk out into the room, everybody sort of game faces because they know I'm about to call somebody in. And then once the door closes, then I think they kind of go back to, so I would hear those stories secondhand. Like after the session is over, my associate or my assistant would come in and say, oh, whatever you do, do not bring this kid back because their parent was completely insane. They were doing this or that. I mean, awful. One time on 70 show, we were casting kids, little kids. And I had to go out to the, and you know what it's like. Oftentimes, you know, you're a parent who's got a kid who's an actor. You got other kids. And when you want to, and when you have to take the kid, the actor kid, to an audition, that means you got to take the other kids with you to the audition too, because where else are they going to go, right? So the rooms can get pretty full. And one time on 70's show, I went out to the waiting room to call a kid in, and there was a kid who was, couldn't have been more than, you know, 9 or 10, maybe. I don't think they were even that old. Lying on a towel spread out on the floor of the lobby. The kid was lying on the towel and had a bucket next to him because the kid was sick with the flu and was throwing up.
No.
And the mom dragged that kid to the audition so that the other kid could audition for the show.
That's awful.
Oh my God.
That was the most disturbing thing I think I saw.
Wow. Yeah. So your assistant, did they ever tell you like, oh my gosh, this parent is insane?
And yeah, no, absolutely.
What is the craziest story you heard from them?
That's really the craziest. I don't remember any of the stories that they would tell me now. I remember them in the moment. But I think the reason that that one sticks in my mind from that 70 show is because I saw it myself. So that really sticks in my brain. But with everybody else, I don't think I don't really remember any of the crazy parent stories. I do know that they happened. I couldn't picture those people. I didn't know who those parents were.
That's so funny because I remember sitting in some of those waiting rooms watching some things and then afterwards going out to the car and Bryce saying to me, Mom, if you ever do anything like that, I will disown you. I think you're safe, buddy. I think you're safe.
You know, it does seem to travel in families because it's usually, if the parent's nuts like that, it usually means the kid doesn't even want to be there. They're there for the parent, or they're both just insufferable. I have also seen the flip where the child actor is so abusive and horrible to their parent that my jaw just drops on the floor. I can't believe that parent or guardian is willing to take that much of their life and set it aside to assist this kid in fulfilling their dreams when that kid is nothing short of a complete nightmare. So I've seen both sides of that.
Absolutely.
And those are easy to spot because those kids come into the room with me. And you can spot those maniacs a mile away. My favorite was one, I don't remember her name, but I brought her in a bunch of times. And when the kids come in, I always have to ask the same few questions, which are age and grade and height. And every time she would come in, you used to ask her age, and she'd always put her, fists on her hips, with her hands out like that, with her arms out, and she'd go, 10 years young. You know how like old people will say that, like, I'm 65 years young, you know, trope every time, 10 years young. And I thought to myself, ugh, this miserable broad. I saw her, and I did see her behavior with her mother in the waiting room a few times, and it was just appalling. But as far as the parents go, they usually tend to tone it down when I walk into the room, and then whatever it is amps up after I'm out. But I will say, all of these stories, so crazy actor parents, the crazy, what do you call them, stage moms or whatever, or the crazy kid actors, or the crazy adult actors, these are all great anecdotally because they are the exception to the rule. So that's why we enjoy hearing these stories, I think, is because they are, this is, but when I feel like the more we tell these stories constantly, and I think that sets people up to expect that that is the norm, and it is not the norm. It is the exception to the rule. Most everybody that comes in, even if they you know, crap the bed with their audition, they are still, you know, they're still, you know, in it to win it and wanting the best out of the situation and are happy to be there or what have you. And it's the same thing with the kids and the parents. Most everybody's, you know, just trying to, you know, do the thing that they enjoy doing for somebody. And it's just these crazy stories do occur. I mean, the three stories I gave you about nightmare auditions that I had, that's over the course now of 22 years. And over 600 episodes of television, which has to run into the tens of thousands of auditions, at least 10,000 auditions. So to have three funny stories to tell you out of 10,000 auditions, and one really remarkably awful kid, that's not a lot.
That isn't a lot. I thought you'd have a lot more.
No, there really aren't more. I mean, there were other things that happened, and, you know, like whatever, but nothing earth shattering or crazy. It's just, for the most part, people are really just people trying to come in and do their job, or parents just trying to make something fun for their kids happen that the kid wants to do. This is what the kid likes to do instead of playing soccer. So Instead of giving up my weekends and a day during the week for the next 10 years of my life, I'm driving them around a few times a week.
Right? Absolutely. Well, G. Charles Wright, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the Badass Babes of Entertainment. And we absolutely love you. And it's really kind of funny how we've had Megan has spent time with you. I've spent time with you because of my son. It's like different from different perspectives. And honestly, you are one of the coolest people out there in casting.
Oh, right on. Thanks a lot for saying that. I really love what I do, so I'm glad it shows.
Very accurate.
It does show. Absolutely. You make everybody feel very comfortable, and you make this fun, and thank you for that.
Yeah, and if you are looking for an amazing acting class, you can go to his website, gcharleswright.com.
That's right, because he's fabulous.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate your time. This was a lot of fun, ladies.
Yeah, thanks
thank
for coming,
you.
G.
Sure.
All right, hope to talk to you soon.
Okay, sounds good. Bye.
Bye. Good to see you.
This episode was produced by me, Brenda Fisher, and Jacqueline Reynolds. Also produced by Megan Ketz. Recording and editing by Herman Villacorta.